This week's show with Stephanie Bishop of Fabrics by Stephanie is sponsored by the Embroiderers Guild of America and Avlia Mediterranean Folk Embroidery. The Embroiderers Guild of America can be found at egausa.org, and much going on with the EGA. The biggest thing is September 1st through 5th, the annual seminar in Chicago. And very excited that Jennifer, Beth, and I will be at the seminar, and we'll be bringing you shows at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, live shows 8 o'clock Eastern Time on our YouTube channel on September 2, 3, and 4. So Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings, we'll have shows where we'll talk about all the things we've done throughout the day, what we've seen, what we've learned. In addition to that, we'll have other videos and other audio interviews with people who are attending the show, teachers, instructors, organizers, and really looking forward to bringing you a video of the exhibit, because I think that's going to be a special thing to look at. And then if you're not a member, you can join as a member at large. That's what I am. Or you can join through a local EGA chapter. And if you're not a member, you're not sure, you want to check it out, go to egausa.org and try the free project section right on the homepage there, free projects. One of the things you can get there is a little book of embroidery basics, a very nice PDF ebook that will take you through all the basics for doing embroidery. And then there are free projects. There are 18 free projects, and I call your attention to the Elizabethan Strawberry by Margaret Kinsey, the American Flag Pin Chart by Carol Light, and a really nice Halloween Blackwork Biscornu by Kim Beamish, and Romanium Point Lace Heart by Tamara Johannes. So those are all free. You don't have to be a member. You can just download those. You have to give your email address, but that's not that big a deal. Download those for free. Get yourself exposed to some of these embroidery techniques. And then consider joining the EGA at egausa.org, either as a member at large or through a local chapter. Then our other sponsor, Krista West, Avlia Mediterranean Folk Embroidery. That's at Avlia, A-V-L-E-A, AvliaEmbroidery.com. One of the things that you really need to check out is the meditative stitching designs that Krista has put together. There are 30 of them. Now, in the regular shop, they have a little M next to them, but she also has grouped them on a page so that you can find those all in one spot and purchase them that way. Meditative kits designs are designs that allow you to sit there, get a pattern in your head, and just stitch. You don't have to keep looking back and forth at a chart to keep up and counting. The pattern is repetitive, and it just allows you to relax and your mind to wander, and it's a very, very soothing practice to stitch these designs. So check those out in the meditative stitching section. Then also call your attention to the basket covers. And what these are designs that are basically a piece of cloth with a very nice border on them that you put in a basket and put fruit or bread or whatever it might be in there. And then you have this beautiful border design all around the edges. And Krista has Pascha, P-A-S-C-H-A, which is Easter, Star of Skyros, a floret border, and Cycladian floral border, and Balkan diamond and arrow are the designs. Check those out because they make a really nice, useful project. And then Krista has shown us a little preview on her Instagram page of Dodecanese Urn, and that will be out in about a week, a whole new design, so watch that. Avlia Mediterranean Folk Embroidery, AvliaEmbroidery.com. Also follow Krista West on Instagram to keep up with all the neat things she's doing. Thanks to EGA and Avlia for sponsoring this show, and now on to our discussion with Stephanie Bishop. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week, from Fabrics by Stephanie, Stephanie Bishop. Stephanie, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We get to learn about dyeing. And as I said before we started recording, it's the putting color on cloth dyeing here that we're going to be talking about. So one of the questions that comes up for most people when it comes to people who dye fabric is, are you also a stitcher, or are you one person who likes to play with chemicals?
I am actually a stitcher. I've been stitching for a very long time.
Oh, okay. Good.
So you're a cross stitcher or surface embroidery? What kind of stitching do you like to do?
I am a cross stitcher. I learned to cross stitch when I was 10 years old. My stepmom taught me, and I remember I had a really hard time because I didn't quite understand how the X's were made, that they all had to go in the same direction. So that took a little getting used to, but I've been stitching since I was 10, and we won't discuss my age right now. So
No, we don't do that.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Yeah. Just little practice pieces when you were young, or did she hand you a project and say, here, do this?
They were little ones. They were like the dime store ones that you could buy at Joann Fabrics that had like the little 14 count Aida, the threads and a little hoop to go with it, you know, for finishing.
Well, yeah.
So of course. I remember. Yeah, of course. I remember doing like a teddy bear and a couple other things. And then through the years, my mom and my stepmom, they owned a cross stitch store together as well. So I worked at their cross stitch store.
Oh, so you got the full indoctrination then. All right.
I did. So, yeah, I mean, I start out on, you know, precious moments.
Well, of course. I mean, you know, what was there other than precious moments?
Right.
Exactly. Precious moments and Hummels.
Yeah, that's right. That's the other one. Yep. Oh, man.
And so working at the cross stitch store, did you expand? What did you expand to after that, after the Hummels and the precious moments were?
I would say, so I was about 16 or 17 when they owned the store, and I would just do I liked a lot of florals, just because the flowers, I liked the changing colors and how they would kind of blend together. And I would do florals. I didn't do a lot of samplers or anything like that. I'm trying to think of some of the other things that I did do. I did a loon. So I did some birds. But for the most part, I'm the master of starts. And
I love you. I love you, Stephanie. Oh, I am your biggest fan at this very moment. Yes.
My husband's like, what are you doing? I'm starting this new project. Really? I'm like, listen, you have 10, 12 fishing poles. I can have 10, 12 projects. It doesn't matter.
There you go. The perfect defense.
It brings you joy.
Excellent.
It does. It does. And I knit too. So I kind of change it up a little bit. So
keep him guessing. Yeah.
So now you currently do you work mainly then still doing florals, or have your interests changed since that 16-year-old that was working at the cross stitch store?
I found Mirabella's. That was a lot of fun because I enjoyed the beauty of them. They were more realistic, you know, between lavender and lace and Nora Corbett's Mirabella's. I don't do those so much anymore. I am working on a lot of samplers. I met several people recently when I was in Massachusetts a couple of weeks ago. I mean, not Massachusetts. Where was I? Maryland. A couple of weeks ago. And the samplers were pretty fun to look at. So I bought a few. Of course, from Queenstown Samplers.
I was going
to
say, that sounds like Barbara Hudson territory right there. Yep.
Yeah, and Barbara's
she's, yes, she is.
Yeah, she
I mean,
will.
from just the conversations we've had, I'm like, oh, I want to meet you. You do beautiful work.
I sat at dinner and she's telling me about all these histories of Quakers, and I'm just like, I love it all. So I'm really grateful that I got to actually talk to her one-on-one. I did get a sampler, and who knows, maybe I'll start it.
She is the best. She is absolutely the best. I mean, yeah, she's been on the show several times, and when she gets going about the history and where all these things came from and how they moved through the country and around the world, I'll just keep going, Barbara. Just keep going. Yeah.
That's exactly how I was. I was like, okay, so you're able to trace this family into this. And so I'm getting more interested in the history. I like to do smaller things now simply because, you know, it's nice to actually finish something. It's just whatever I decide to do at that time. And I do go back and I do work on other things that I might have started a couple of years ago. I'll be like, okay, that's where I stopped. So I'll just pick up here and I'll work on it a little bit.
Oh, that is so cool. You got to sit at dinner with Barbara Hudson and listen. Yeah. She's a treasure. There's no doubt about it.
We had a good time.
And now you're being sucked down the sampler hole. So that's good too. So, you know.
Yeah, I was
And
looking at a lot of.
once you start that, there's so many, and they're all each are more and more interesting, and it's like, oh, oh no.
For sure. And the colors, I mean, she does so well with the reproduction colors that they're just beautiful.
They're an addicting little thing. Some people will say, well, they all look the same, and so therefore I'm not interested. But I disagree every time. Yeah, a lot of them will start to take on the same look, but yeah, once you dig in a little bit, they're all very distinctly different and have their own element of fun. Yeah.
For sure.
So, which one did you buy? Let's get that right on the record right now. Which one?
Oh, I don't remember
Don't
which
remember.
one. I
Okay.
don't.
Was it a Quaker or do you remember?
If you want me one second, I'll go get it. It's in the other room.
Well, we must know. We must know.
Okay, one sec. Okay, it's Hannah, 1805.
Hannah Longstreth. Oh, good choice. Good choice.
Okay, so my thought process
Oh.
behind this one is that I can work on one motif
Yep.
and finish it.
Yep.
And then move on to the
Gary,
next.
did
Hey, I finished it. Hey,
how does that work,
Beth, I
Gary?
finished it. That's one of very few on the plus side. I finished it.
It's all about intent. You know, you intend to do
Right.
it.
But no, you're right, and that's what I used, that little trick, Stephanie, when I was stitching Hannah, was the fact that I could you there's standalone motifs, and you finish that, it's like I knocked off a project right there. Yeah. Yep. So, all right, so now we got to know all the details. What count of linen are you going to use? I assume your own fabric, silk or cotton.
I will probably use cotton. And I do the smallest I can do is 32 counts.
Okay.
Womp womp. So
That's all right. I mean, I think it'll be beautiful. I think no matter what you stitch on, it doesn't have any over one. So I think I personally, I've seen some people do beautiful things with the Aida anymore. And I think it's whatever you can stitch and that you're comfortable with.
Aida is extremely popular right now because of COVID. You have new stitchers coming in who haven't, or stitchers who haven't stitched in a while, don't even know what hand-dyed fabric is. And they're like, I want to stitch, but all I've ever stitched on is Aida. And they're like, I want to do this. So I'm like, I dye Aida, so I'll dye whatever, you know, color you want.
What counts of Ada are people staying at the lower counts or?
I will say the most popular is 16 and 18.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
16 is probably go-to because it's, you know, 32 count equivalent.
Right.
There is Silver Creek samplers.
Yep.
She uses 18 count Aida on all of her models now. So, because she stitches them
Really?
herself. Yeah, she stitches them herself. And she said that 18 count Aida is the one thing she's probably most comfortable with. So I'm like, hey, if other stitchers, especially newer stitchers, can see that you're not afraid to use Aida, because there's a lot of people like, oh, you stitch on Aida?
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be like that. Stitch on what makes you happy.
Yeah, that really bothers me
Yes,
as if it's a,
absolutely.
yeah, as if it's a second tier cloth, and it's not. And especially these overdyes are
No.
so beautiful, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
No, I used to only stitch on Aida until I started dyeing fabric. And then my New Year's resolution was, all right, you're going to learn how to do even weave. And I did Lugana. And then I'm like, all right, you're going to go on to linen. And I taught myself how to stitch on linen, and I've stitched on linen ever since.
Look at you forcing the advancement of the
Well, I do have a best friend who stitches on only Aida, and her and I have stitched together for years, and she's tried different fabrics, and she's like, I'm sorry, I just like my Aida. I'm like, you do what makes you happy. So.
Yeah. Well, there is, that's one of the pluses that Ada has is there's no question about where to put the needle, and that little solid piece in between the four holes gives you a nice even X, and you can motor right along. I mean, there's some real pluses there.
Yeah, for sure.
And the other thing is, and we live where it's a very tactile art. What we are doing, we're pulling thread through fabric. You're touching it. So some people don't like how Aida feels. They feel the same way about perforated paper, how that feels in their hands. But some people like that stiffness that it has, and that's what they prefer. It's not that they probably can't see the holes, in linen. It's just like, hey, I prefer how this feels in my hand. And I'm like, more power to you, whatever you want to stitch. I love seeing your overdyed linens and Aida and all the colors you have, though, that you offer. Do you have a more most popular What's your most popular color right
It
now?
kind of ebbs and flows right now. I will say probably the most popular is the neutrals, all the neutrals, chocolate milk, toasted almond, colonial parchment, which my husband named that one. Just the neutrals, because that's what people are wanting right now.
Do you think it's because people are stitching prims and samplers on them?
I think a lot of them are prims and samplers. I also think that neutrals in houses for, when you actually decorate, they kind of go with everything. Some of the wilder colors, if you're doing something specific, Halloween, a Mirabella where it's a
Right.
mermaid and you want something to be water, those are very specific. And then, I just think that they're easier to decorate with if you're doing it for yourself.
Yeah, see that that doesn't enter into my thinking. No, that's someone else's problem decorating. Yeah. Yep.
I often get emails where people ask me, which one do you like better? And I'm like, I can give you my opinion, but I can tell you that you're the one who has to hang it in your house if that's what you're doing, So I typically, if they ask me for colors, I will give them probably three colors, more on the neutral side. I have a confession. I am afraid of color.
Really?
Yeah, I don't. I stick with lighter colors. I don't do wild and crazy colors on anything that I stitch, ever.
I struggle with color
That
too.
surprises me, though.
It's one of those things, and I hate dyeing red.
Oh, yeah. Well, I understand that.
Why? Because it's hard to get consistent.
Not only that, but it just looks like blood everywhere. So it's really hard to make, like, if you dye a solid red, that's fine. But if you mix it with something else, it just looks like a murder scene. It's basically what it looks like. So yeah, I usually just dye plain red. I have two reds that I do, and that's it.
Looks like a murder scene. Okay.
And when I dye red, red is the hardest color to rinse out.
Yes.
At least in what the dyes I use. So.
Yes. It's not anything dark. Dark colors just are not, they're hard to rinse out.
So how do you go from working in a cross stitch store? Where does the dyeing come in? What sends you down the path of chemistry?
All right. So first of all, I failed chemistry. Solid D minus. I have two older sons. They are 25 and 24. And then probably 13 years later, I got pregnant again with our daughter, who is 11. And I was a lunch lady. And here I am. We're going to have another kid. And I'm like, how the heck? So I was working on a project and I wanted a specific color. And you can't really tell. And I know that this is a problem on screens, your computer screen. So I'm like, I'm just going to go get some RIT dye. Everybody goes down the RIT rabbit hole. So I went to Joann's. I looked up some stuff online on YouTube. And I'm like, I'm going to dye some fabric. And my husband's giving me a side eye like, what the heck? So Elizabeth at this time was probably 2. And I dyed the fabric. I actually dyed several different kinds because I wanted to see what I could come up with. And I got what I wanted. And I started my project, probably never finished it. But anyway, I did dye it and I had like several pieces left over. So on Facebook, you know, there's the groups where you can get rid of your stash.
Mm-hmm.
I went on there. I listed the rest of the fabric. Some of it was Monaco. Some of it was Ada. And it sold within like 15 minutes and I had like $60.
Uh-oh.
And I told my husband, I'm like, oh my gosh, look at this. And again, side eye, he's like, okay, there she goes again. Anyway, I kept doing that until I had like, I think it was $500 saved up. And I showed him and he's like, what the heck are you doing? And I said, all that dying that you've been laughing at, I've been making money on this. So I started researching. I had no business experience, nothing. Now, mind you, this is RIT dye. So I freaked out because I kept thinking, oh my gosh, somebody's going to put stuff on this. It's going to fade. It's going to look awful, you know, because RIT is not a bonding dye. It doesn't bond mm-hmm. as well as the Procyon dyes. So I'm like, all right. So then I started to research the actual professional dyes that you use for different types of fabric. And that was fun. And I'm doing all this while working from 7 in the morning till 12:30 in the afternoon, taking care of Elizabeth. And, you know, and then what I would do is I would dye in my kitchen. And, you know, then I would take down at, you know, for dinner. We'd eat dinner and then I would dye until midnight because people were placing orders. And my husband's like, why are you still working? I'm like, you know, well, because, you know, we need the money. And so he sat down and he's like, Stephanie, you make $70 a week when you figure in daycare and stuff. He's like, drop the job. Work on this. I'm like, but I have no business experience. He's like, we'll figure it out. So we did. And it's been 9 years now. I've been in business 9 years. And we've been, it was trial and error at first, especially learning the chemistry of the dyes and the ratios and all the things that go along with it. That's been a learning curve. But consistency is what you need when you dye fabric. So that's what I did. I just became very consistent. And here I am, and I was, like I said, I would sit on a milk crate. I would take orders on my break. I'd go through the orders, and then I would dye them at night. So, it's like I said, we in the kitchen, my husband would help me as much as he can, and I will say we've come a long way. He fixed the basement for me. So the basement has, a sink, running water, cabinets, anything I need. I have a serging station. I have an ironing station, and then I even have a wall that he built me for the big, huge bolts that come the 55-meter yards. And it's a whole wall of fabric, so I can just pull them off the roll.
Oh, excellent. So
So yeah.
you're set up in the basement, you're set up for to manufacture. That's great.
And we were actually going to build onto our house, but we decided that, for minimal cost, which I think it ended up maybe being like $2,600, instead of building onto the house and all that cost, I could do it in the basement and it's perfectly fine. I mean, the floor is concrete. Who cares if I drop dye on it, you know? So,
I was wondering about that because
You do drop a lot of dye.
we've dropped a whole, yeah, I've dropped a we dropped a whole quart jar of black one time on carpet. So
Oh.
was it
that's,
powder?
oh, no, it was, we were mixing it at the library, and we had it in a quart jar, the liquid, and
Oh, okay.
the jar slipped out of someone's hands, and there was the glass didn't break, but the dye, yeah.
Yeah, it's not fun.
What a mess.
It isn't.
No.
Or my the one thing that I really do hate, I always buy good gloves, is I hate when I get a glove that has a hole in it and my finger turns colors. So, but that's a job hazard.
Yep. As you're developing your recipes, I assume you have notebooks of just mad chemist notes in there trying to find the formulations that give you the consistency.
I have a spreadsheet, and I use a typical ratio. So, I mean, that's all in my brain. But if I do something specific, like for instance, Kathy Haberman from Hands On Design, she was looking for a specific shade of turquoise. She wanted it much lighter, and that ended up being my vintage Tiffany that she used. I had to send her several different shades, which was fine. And she picked one, so I had to write down, obviously what I did for each one. But for the most part, I have a spreadsheet, and I very rarely do I have to go to the spreadsheet to figure out which colors I'm using or which order they go on, because the order that you put them on the fabric is important. It makes a difference.
When you do dyeing, do you make sure you wear those safety? I know you wear gloves, but you wear the mask because it is a powder that you work with, correct?
Yes, I work with a powder. Yes, I do have a mask, and I've been using that for all 9 years.
Okay.
Some dyes I know that will carry more than others, so I'm a little bit more cautious, especially with the blues. Because of the Carilion blue. So, but yes, I do that. I wear an apron. I tie my hair up. When people come to the door, oh my gosh, my husband's a firefighter. Okay, and the cops
The
come
metal
by our
image,
house.
the metal image right
Oh, yeah,
there.
the cops come by our house often just to say hi or whatever. And one day, one of the police come by, and I come out, and I'm wearing purple gloves. My hair's up in a clip. I'm wearing an apron, and I have my mask on. And he's looking at me, and I'm like, I'm not making meth in my basement. And he laughs. He's like, wow. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, because it looks so bad. You know, you're. you're all dressed up in this stuff. I'm like, the dogs were barking. So, I mean, I ran upstairs really quick. I didn't even think about it. And he's laughing. He's like, I know what you do for a living. It's fine. I'm like, oh, thank you. So we had a chuckle. And yeah, it's one of those things that you just laugh at.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you're getting to work with the various designers then as they develop their designs to give them the right background. That sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. It is. And I love to meet new people. And I've gotten to know several, actually dozens of designers. I've enjoyed that. I work with, like I said, hands-on design. I work with Summer House Stitchworks, Silver Creek Samplers. I'm working with Threadwork Primitives and several others. So I'm doing that. And I do attend a market. So that's the Nashville market in the spring.
Yeah. But that's great because that gives you a creativity as opposed to just cranking out your standard colors. That gives you a opportunity to stretch a little.
Yeah. And if somebody says, hey, I'm thinking this, but maybe a little bit lighter, I do those ratios, you know, and the chemistry that goes along with it and just your basic, you know, tweaking along the way to get what that designer's looking for. And again, consistency for my customers is important too, because if I'm doing it by the yard, that's going to be different than doing it by the quarter yard.
Right. Are you at a spot where are you constantly building up inventory, or do you die as you get orders?
Well,
and of course, these days, the bigger question, can you actually get material?
Well, that's the fun part. As you know, with COVID, it's been a very huge struggle just to get fabric. So I spend typically Mondays and Tuesdays jostling around trying to find fabric, who's got some, and I have several sources that I use. So, and I typically
we're still at that point then where you just can't go to your main source. You are constantly searching for. Oh boy. Wow.
Yeah. It's so what I'll do, and this is just my preference as a dyer who's trying to get their product out to their customer, is so Wichelt has fabric that has and I'm sure that you've heard this before, they have it with sizing and then no sizing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want those dark rich colors, you use no sizing because it takes it better, it doesn't have the chemical. If I'm just dyeing a light color and the light color comes out, like if I'm doing like a chocolate milk or toasted almond and or something very light, I will use the fabric with sizing just because I know that that customer needs the fabric. So I kind of mix it up. So I'm pulling from everywhere just to get product.
Wow. What a headache. Ugh.
It's awful. It is. And if I got like, I think it was 5 like 55 meter bolts of fabric that came from Fleur de Paris in California.
Mm-hmm.
And now, mind you, that's cross country because I live in Michigan, and they came, and those are the ones that I put on my wall of fabric. And I'm still using those because those don't have any sizing in them. So when I'm doing the darker colors, I make sure I pull those so that I get something that's much more consistent to what the customer's used to. So yeah, it's, and they're months behind, and then it's all manufactured in Germany. And Germany was shut down. They've been shut down 3 times, and they are also shut down for August for their holiday month.
Oh, that's right. The European holiday. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. They don't budge off of that. They don't budge at all.
Nope. So we're going to have fabric lag again. And so I'm trying to pull, I have fabric. It's just, it depends on some days I get a run. People really, really want 18 count. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I may not have it, So I have to order it and pray that it comes in. So it's getting a little bit better or has gotten better. But yeah, and the other problem is dyes. Dyes is a huge problem. So,
Same deal,
right.
just can't get it. Yeah.
Their components, yes, they stopped. I mentioned the Carilion Blue. They stopped mining it in, I believe, China and India.
We're all the way
Yeah.
back to the mine now. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, they stopped mining it. And if you go, like, I go on my websites that I use Dharma Trading and then Pro Dyes. And there's lists of dyes that they're like reformulating, unavailable, waiting on
Yes.
components. You know, it's a real thing. And people don't understand. I've had several customers. They're like, you can't keep using COVID as an excuse. And I'm like, the reality of it is, it's not an excuse. It's just the reality.
Right. Well, see, that's
This is
the,
how it is.
that really paints a picture because it doesn't just apply to dye and cloth. I mean, that's what shops all across the country are dealing with every day is this very problem. It's the supply chain is just cracked and broken all over the place.
It
And
is,
when
whether
you, yeah.
you, yeah, whether it's the automotive industry because they can't get chips for the vehicles or, you know, just so many different things. You take it for granted. And when everything shut down, like I said, people came out of the woodwork. They're like, oh my gosh, what does a one thing a crafter loves? A pandemic. I can sit at home and stitch. And my orders were insane. And so not only that, I'm dealing with large volume
Yeah.
and a supply shortage and a dye shortage. So I think I posted on my website that I saw a light at the end of the tunnel and I was praying to God it wasn't an oncoming train because, you know, things are getting better, but I'm still here dying. I do try to do some of the more popular colors, like I said, the neutrals. I will try to do additional cuts. So if somebody, you know, comes in, I try to get it out as soon as possible. But I don't have everything dyed.
Yeah. What a struggle. No,
No, that would be.
the magazine that I edit is a manufacturing magazine. And of course, that issue comes up all the time. And I just did an article because part of what we focus on is the maintenance end of manufacturing, maintaining all the assets, all the machinery. And the author of this article was talking about the supply chain and how you have to stay on top of what parts you're going to need because of you can't afford to have a critical piece of machinery go down and then you can't get the part. And
Absolutely.
so you're describing the same thing that was described in this article of you must stay on top of it all of the time because if you don't, you'll get caught short and a plant will shut down, or as in your case, you can't provide dyed fabric and then customers get upset and the whole thing just breaks apart. And yeah, it's what a struggle. Wow.
It is. It's
Right.
and
And
it's frustrating.
you're just one person, you know, it's just you doing all the dyeing. I don't think people realize the time it takes to do the dyeing, you know. So you, if it's already doesn't have the sizing in it, you don't have to pre-wash it, correct?
I will soak it. I'll soak it in
Okay.
warm water. But
So
yeah.
can you just a quick steps, because I think people are interested in that. I don't think they realize. To now, a writ is different, but you're right, it doesn't bind. But when you're using those Procyon dyes, you have steps to go through.
Yes. So basically mine is I have the quote unquote soda ash mix that you use.
Right.
That's what binds the color to the fiber. Now, I will say probably I had just started dyeing fabric. I live in a very small town in Michigan. It's a rural town. I was at the this is a little off topic, but I was at the post office and I was mailing some orders and the lady asked me what I did and I said I dye fabric for a living and this girl looks at me and like you what? And I said I hand dye fabric for cross stitching. I don't know how this happened, but this lady has a master's degree in fiber arts. So I paid her a fee and I said, will you come in and show me how you dye fabric and some of your, you know, little. So I did. And she came to my house and she's like in her early 20s. And she's like, my parents said my degree would not go anywhere. And I'm like, well, I appreciate you. And so what she told me was that the keeping the fiber wet and allowing it to absorb and kind of just take in the water will open up those fibers to take the dye better. So rather than just like throw it in the washing machine and let it spin and do a thing, I just let it soak. It just stays in there and soaks. So what I'll typically do is like a certain day of the week, I will take my orders. I have a production sheet and I will count up how much I need of each fabric, what sizes and counts. And I just start cutting. And then I serge. I'm doing everything because it's just me. So then I'll serge. And then I will take sticky notes and put them on the piles for what colors they are. So I go through lots of sticky notes. And then when I go to dye, I do let them just soak for a bit. I pull them out and it depends on which one I'm doing. If I'm doing over dyed with multiple colors, I apply the dye rather than pour it on and let it soak. So, and mm-hmm. if, I mean, Beth, do you do multiple colors as well?
I have done. And it's just for me, I just play with it. So I've done layers, yes.
So you know that you got to keep the fabric moving because if you don't, mm-hmm. you're going to get those big, huge blotches. So right. it's kind of like you have to play this ballet of, okay, these ones need to be moved around a little bit and then these ones can soak, but oh, I got to go flip them because you don't want the super muddling because if somebody's paying for a neutral, they don't want heavy muddling because it's obviously going to be for like a sampler or something soft and delicate. So, you know, it just depends. And that's how I dye. The dyes sit for approximately 2 hours unless it's black. Black has to be mixed the night before, sit for 24 hours, at least 12 to 24 hours. And then I apply it and it sits another 24 hours because it's just a difficult color. And then I wash. I do wash in my washer. I wash and dry in my dryer. I live in Michigan. I can't put things out on a line in the wintertime. It would be frozen stiff. And I don't have time to let it all dry in my basement. So I do that as well. And then I do all the ironing and packaging. My daughter will help me. My husband has serged for me. He will iron for me. And eventually Elizabeth, who's 11 now, I'll put her to work.
Darn right. Yep. Yep. She's on the payroll. She might as well work. That's right.
Yep. And that's what I told her. I'm like, all right. So, but she does help me. There's nothing an 11-year-old child loves more than putting stickers on things. So when I do different things, she'll put stickers on the tags for me.
Oh, okay.
So. But yeah, that's, great. I mean, I use a fabric press as well. I don't use like a hand iron.
Oh, that's good to hear because the thought of hand ironing all that. Ugh.
Yeah, it's not fun.
So basically when you're dying, you're like a plate spinner. You're working all different levels at the same time.
Yes. Yeah, that's basically, and like, God forbid, and it's happened, I don't know, numerous times, you know, somebody will come to the door or the phone will ring and I'll forget like, oh, shoot, I forgot to, you know, rotate this. And I'll be like, oh, well, there's that. But I nothing goes to waste. I always, even if it doesn't come out the way it's supposed to, I'll put it in a drawer. And when I go to retreats, somebody will always buy it.
Oh, okay.
If they can see it in person, if it's got a muddle spot on it, and they'll be like, I can use that, you know, or sometimes and Beth probably understands exactly what I'm saying when you get the spots.
Yes, the spots. Yeah.
The
And
spots.
actually that doesn't bother me. You know, as long as I can, you know, either stitch over them or I can incorporate them into a design, it doesn't bother me. But yes, if you don't mix the dye thoroughly, I think people think, oh, it's not a big deal to hand dye your own fabric. You know, first of all, the linen is expensive.
Oh, God,
And
yes.
if you're just messing with it yourself, you can make a huge, I mean, if you can make a mistake and you've, I mean, what does linen cost a yard? Just plain white. It's like $80 to $100 a yard
Yeah.
just to buy it. And so if you make a mistake, that's a big mistake to be making on a $100 piece of
is.
fabric.
It is. And I've learned through the years too, there's different tricks to do it. Like if certain colors do, like blues, being that they reformulated this one blue that I use, it's put blue spots on, and I'm like, seriously? So you put it through a coffee filter. And that will help take care of the blue spots, or you let it sit longer. So, I mean, it's little things that you learn throughout the years, and you just kind of put those in your. And I have a little group that of hand dyers that I'm friends with, and we help each other out too.
That's neat. Yeah, I'm not surprised there's a club. Yeah, got to be a club.
Yeah. Yeah, because you might be out of a dye, but somebody has it, and you have a customer that really needs it, and or you're having problems with a new formulation, and then several
Yep.
heads work better than just one. That's for sure.
Yeah, and we typically don't discuss our technique, but just like little things like putting a couple extra towels in the dryer when you're drying so that they don't kind of bunch up and they have these marks on them. Just things like that that we kind of just help each other out with. And
Right.
I mean, my basic thought, and I told Barbara Hudson this as well, that if we succeed, the designers succeed, our industry succeeds. So if we all support each other, then we can sustain what we love.
Right. That's true. Yep.
Right.
Yeah. So what is the trend you're seeing when it comes to the mottled or I don't know what the terms are, cloth versus a solid color. Are people still wanting those mottled colors, those ice dyed or whatever? I don't know. Help me out, Beth. What are the terms? Do they still want that, or is solid more in demand?
For me, I would say solid is more in demand. I don't ice dye, me personally. I do have a couple of techniques that I really want to try, and I haven't yet because I haven't had time. Yeah, time.
Time.
Yeah, but I will say that solid colors are pretty much my staple. And you will see the holidays like Halloween. You typically go for more crazy colors. July is when people start usually doing the crazier colors for Halloween.
Oh, okay.
So there's that. My slowest month typically is June. And that's just because summer starts and people are doing their thing, but it does pick up again. And I will say, it just depends on what project they're using, they're doing. So some people are very specific. They want it to be, and let's just say, if somebody says, "Hey, I'm using Fabrics by Stephanie," people will go out of their way to get the recommended fabric.
Yes. Yeah. Well, they want the look. They want the overall look, sure.
Yep. And so my most popular one recently for overdyed is Jamie's Kilt. I don't know. I'm an Outlander fan, and I just named it, and it's one of my most popular ones, and it's like three different colors, and it comes out beautiful every time. even shops are like, I can't believe how pretty this fabric is. So that part's really great because I'm getting that, recognition for being consistent.
All right, where do the names come from? Because it seems to me it's the same thing as a housing builder who's doing subdivisions and has to come up with a subdivision name and all the street names, Spring Glen and blah blah blah. So, do you have software that just puts words together, or what do you do?
No, I try to do the neutrals are really hard because everybody has a toasted almond, everybody has a chocolate milk or whatever. Milk chocolate is typically what people call it. I called it chocolate milk because my daughter said, "Oh, that looks like chocolate milk." Okay. I am a huge fan of Outlander. I'm a huge fan of Game of Thrones. And so I have a couple named ones that are fandoms that I used. You don't want to get in trouble with copyright, obviously.
Right.
So I have Jack's Rum, and you can probably guess who Jack is because he likes rum. If you're a fan of Pirates of the Caribbean. And then I just try to come up with crazy names that nobody else would come up with. I love mythology. I have, like I said, Colonial Parchment. My husband named it. He's like, I said, everybody has parchment. He's like, yeah, but what about Colonial Parchment? I'm like, okay, cool. I have several that are named. I don't make them anymore, but some are named after friends, my nieces, if they're like a name. So it just depends. And then I will make sure that I try really hard not to copy somebody else's colors or names.
Yeah, well, plus that can just be a problem at some point, yeah.
Yeah, and it is. And Picture This Plus has like I think a legacy. And my daughter's like, yeah, but do they have legendary? I mean, just things that you do. I think one of my favorite ones was I had one called Imp's Playground. It was a purple and a green. I don't make it anymore because the green isn't made anymore. But I mean, you just try to come up with some just fun stuff. I have an Elizabeth. It's pink. And then we call my daughter Izzy is her nickname. So I have a busy Izzy. I come up with whatever I can come up with. So.
Well, that sounds like it's easier for you than some, because I know some designers to come up with a name for a design is one of their biggest headaches. So, sounds
It
like
is.
you're at least cranking out the ideas, yeah.
Yep. And there's a few that I've actually like Kathy from Hands On Design, she named one called Friendship Green for me. I'm like, I don't have a name for it. She's like, what about this? And I'm like, okay, cool. So, it worked out well. And everybody's like, okay, so what are the stories behind these? And I'm like, oh, one I had called Neverland Sea, and that was from Jake and the Neverland Pirates, which is a cartoon my daughter used to watch on Disney.
Okay. Grab them from
It just depends.
anywhere. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
Do you run into problems with dyes quite a bit where they just quit making a dye and you have to reformulate?
There's only been like three, well, recently it's been more of a challenge. When I first started dyeing, yes. I had two colors that I used. One was called Rust Orange, and the other one was Claret. And they stopped making them. They will still mix them for you, but you need to buy the 5 pound container, which runs you about 100, 120 bucks. And they tell me it's only good for like 2 years, but it's been in the cupboard and hasn't seen the light of day. So I'm going on like 7 years.
Yeah, we've used dyes that are 20 years old. So I mean, you might not get the intensity after a while. Those were really old. We were trying to use them up, but yeah, it will lose its intensity after a while.
Yep. So
Just from
I just
experience, I can give you that.
Yep, I'll put it in the corner and it'll be under under the cupboard and doesn't see the light of day, no UV light, nothing. So, and it's in the basement where it's cold. So, that's a plus. But yeah.
So that, just for perspective then, if I have to buy 5 pounds of a powder, that's for most people a lifetime supply. I mean, that you don't use that much per batch, right?
No. You usually use I use depending on the amount that I'm dyeing, I use teaspoons or tablespoons. So,
Yeah. Oh, man.
yeah, it doesn't it lasts a good long time. Like I said, we're going on like 6 or 7 years here, and I keep looking at it going, huh, well, you're still dying nice. I'll keep using you.
Yes,
And the good
yes.
thing is that no other dyers, typically have those colors because they're not being made anymore. Because we all use the same colors.
Does the club have like a signet ring and a secret handshake? Or no, never mind.
No. No, we mostly are like, seriously, I can't believe I did this batch and all that's all is blue spots, Because I don't run every color through coffee filters. I kind of know which ones are trouble. So if I get one that's a little off, and I'll be like, oh my gosh. And I do a fabric of the month for Needlecraft Corner. And I ran into some issues. I told her, I'm like, I have to redye probably about 12 fabrics. But like I said, I reuse everything. If it's not sold, it's redyed. So, and I can redye those little blue spots to one of my colors, slate. Because you can't see it, so it's not a big deal. So I reuse everything.
There's a way out of every problem.
Yeah, I don't want to waste my money. I don't want to waste my product. And somebody will think it's beautiful down the line anyway. So.
Well, this has been a great deal of fun, Stephanie. Thanks for doing this. Learned a lot.
Sure. I am
Yeah,
glad I
thank you
got
so much.
quite the little world.
I don't know how sane it is, but it's mine.
Well, now when we see Fabrics by Stephanie, we can picture you in the basement in all the PPE
Yep,
with
slaving
vats.
away. And actually, PPE is one of the things that was very hard to get too.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
So I had reverted to, because I use medical gloves, rubber gloves, and I actually had to go to my husband. I'm like, can I buy some from the fire department? He's like, because they were only selling to, emergency services. And he's like, well, let's look on, Amazon. And we did, and we found some. But again, it's been a struggle there too. So,
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even think about that. So every aspect of your business has been affected seriously by this pandemic.
yeah, in one way or another.
Jeez. It
Yes.
ain't going away anytime soon either.
Nope. Thank you, Delta.
All right, Stephanie,
But
thanks a lot.
thank
Appreciate
you.
the time, and thanks to everybody for listening.